We live in an age of excess words. We are all much too familiar with a certain public figure who, when someone disagrees with him or criticizes him, is quick to mock, criticize, berate, or humiliate the other. News about his latest bombastic claim or lie is everywhere. Words, as we know, can hurt us and also confuse us. I listen to the weather forecasters, who seem like they offer an effusion of countless words, depicting highs and lows, fronts and storms, and I lose track of exactly what is going to happen, except that it always ends up sounding a lot worse than it ever turns out. It can feel a little bit like listening to some preachers or teachers trying to disseminate their wisdom while we listeners are feeling either bored or uninterested and just wish it were over. This is the picture I recall listening to fundamentalist preachers in church during my childhood. I went to Sunday school before church and then had to sit through the entire adult service every week. Thank God for crayons and paper and my mother's endless supply of lifesavers. We all need diversions or soothing balms from all the words in the world. There is a stereotype that ministers talk endlessly. Preachy is a word that implies a high moralistic tone rather than mere length. But it also connotes being talked at rather than to, and hardly invites conversation. Length of sermons has long been an issue in the Protestant tradition. The first woman to be ordained with full denominational authority was the Universalist Olympia Brown, and she is credited with being the first to say, "You don't save a soul after 20 minutes." Whether I am preaching, teaching, or even engaged in conversation, I try to be aware of what Andrea, my wife, calls my lecture mode. Because I am so focused on facts and information as my preferred way of interpreting the world, I can easily go into endless detail about an issue without realizing that perhaps there is a larger point to be made that I want to convey. In lecture mode, I can lose my listeners by giving them too much detail, when it might be better to simply shut up and come to the point. Is too much talk a problem? We all have concerns about conversations where we either say too much or say the wrong thing, and the burden of that faux pas stays with us. We either can't forgive ourselves or let go of what was said. Thinking of those startling moments when someone said something to you that continues to inflict pain upon you years later, and we just can't let it go. In high school, my football coach screamed at me one Monday after the team had viewed the game film from the previous Saturday. "Harris," he said, "at the beginning of the season, I said that you would be the best tight end in Western Massachusetts. Well, you're the worst." Couldn't he have found a more helpful way to express his dissatisfaction with me rather than degrading me in front of the entire team? And it seems to me that too many families communicate with frequent put-downs. We also have to be wary when we are touting our own experiences. Just a few years ago, I was speaking to someone who underwent a medical procedure for the same issue that I have. There are two major ways to treat it. He chose a surgical route, and described how this was the most certain way to make sure you were properly treated, and otherwise you might not have a good outcome. Unfortunately, he knew I was choosing the other treatment, and so his words called everything I planned into question. I was feeling confident one minute and paranoid the next. Did I need to rethink this? What if I'm wrong? Even though my doctor had told me that either treatment was equally effective, the positive experience someone else had threw everything in my mind into turmoil. What if he just said, "I hope it goes well for you"? But I'm happy to report that this year I graduated after 5 years from radiation oncology. Words that hurt or confuse linger in our hearts. Most of us know the experience of when we have said the wrong thing and regret it later. We don't want to say something that will inflict pain or cause sharp disagreement. Years ago, in a couples group discussion, I remember one of the men feeling that his ill-advised opinion could provoke a fight and said to his wife, "And how do you want me to feel?" He was determined not to provoke any problems and was ready to regurgitate exactly what she wanted to hear. There are other times when we do freely express ourselves and find it provokes a negative reaction. This can result in those situations where we keep trying to explain ourselves, and the more we say, the worse it gets. I have lingering memories of trying to explain once to my parents where their car had been until 3 a.m. and how it managed to smell so bad. The more I said, the angrier they became. Sometimes we would be better off if we say we have made a mistake, vow to do better next time, and go to bed. Instead, we try to explain it away and make up endless reasons or excuses for why something happened. We all have a hard time saying we are sorry and admitting it when we are wrong. And so we often endlessly provide excuses to justify our actions. We all know that words have consequences. Sometimes the words we say to others are presumptuous. In a New Yorker article some years ago, Tina Fey wondered, what is the rudest question you can ask a woman? Fey says the usual questions would be, "How old are you?" or "How much do you weigh?" But she feels the rudest question is neither of these. It is, "How do you juggle it all?" She then goes on to illustrate her own concerns about being a working mother coupled with her own projections. Her daughter brought home a book called My Working Mom, which depicted a witch on the cover. She thought this meant that any woman who worked full-time was a witch who was depriving her children, and that her daughter was giving her this not-so-subtle message. Yet, this turned out to be a totally erroneous presupposition. Because it had a witch on it, her daughter believed the book was about Halloween, and she asked her mom to read it to her because she could not read. She had no idea what message it was conveying and merely wanted to celebrate the holiday. Sometimes it's better to shut up and not make presumptions, but instead enjoy what the other person wants to enjoy with you. We all worry about the effect our words can have on others. As a minister over the years, I worried about what I would say all the time. Clergy, as you know, are supposed to be all compassionate, supportive, and articulate in all settings. So if you are in crisis or need affirmation, we all want to say the most pastoral thing possible. But how often is that possible? We love the people of the congregations we serve, and we want them to endure a minimal number of emotional traumas. And yet we all know that our lives and our families bring heartache as well as joy. And when something does not work out, we want to hear your sorrow and heartache to support you. And when joy occurs, we want to affirm your happiness. Yet we worry. What if I say congratulations on that third pregnancy and you have misgivings? What if I say we can celebrate your mom's long life or be thankful she is at peace and you are torn with grief? Worst of all is if we try to rehearse a conversation. When I was a young minister, I worked as a chaplain. I remember trying to create or rehearse what I would say in response to the hospital patient. I wanted my conversation to be scripted so I could get the best, most compassionate response. The problem is, I had no idea what they were actually going to say to me. We all have this problem where we are all ready to present our script and fail to listen to the person before us. Sometimes our own issues and presumptions and scripts prevent us from truly meeting and hearing others. Thinking words are the most important thing we can give to a relationship may mean we will try to fashion wise words that are not wise at all. Bella English, a former Boston Globe columnist, who was a parishioner of mine in Milton, Massachusetts, wrote a Globe article a few years ago called Crossroads. A bike crash sends the rider on an unexpected course. Describing her traumatic brain injury, Bella talks about what was most helpful: food that people made and items they brought to help her, and their mere presence for support. What didn't help were the things well-meaning people sometimes said. This included phrases like, "You look awful," or, "I heard you almost died." They also wanted to hear endless detail. People want to be able to be supportive of each other. But what we forget is that it is often not what we say that truly counts. It is not our wisdom about their trauma, but rather about being present so that they know we care. In response to such a trauma, the person does not need our words. They need our compassion and our presence. We use words to grapple for answers and meaning and problem-solving solutions, but sometimes there is no meaning or answers. It is a look of love and a listening ear of support that count most. What is most important is to listen and be present and give time, not words. We think what befalls people must have meaning, and we want to label the forces in the universe benign or fair. But sometimes tragic life events have no intrinsic meaning. They just happened. And we need to be present to each other. The worst thing is when someone says, "Everything happens for a reason." No story conveys the fact that life can bring us tragic circumstances more than that of Job. Our call to worship today begins with Job's complaint that his life is not fair. But his friend Zophar tells him that no one can fathom the mysteries of God or creation, and maybe he got off lighter than he deserved. His words end up confusing matters, for on the one hand, he says it is impossible to figure things out. And on the other, he has a pretty established system of divine rewards and punishments. Which is it? We live in a noisy world where we think we are supposed to come up with all the answers. While the deepest questions remain unanswerable, we still strive to tell more and more, thinking we will understand it all if we hear it all. And so when we have a medical issue, we often search endlessly on the internet for more and more information, but only make ourselves more anxious by doing so. Job tried to talk to everybody and was not reconciled until he learned to be quiet before God. And yet people say more and more to try to convince, win sympathy, and make sure every detail is revealed. In the end, do we become so saturated with words that we cannot make real connections anymore or find the truth? Dag Hammarskjöld, the former UN Secretary General, once said, "The best and most wonderful thing that can happen to you in this life is that you should be silent and let God work and speak." While some of us might be uncomfortable with the idea of letting God speak, I think we could translate this to mean that we should let our lives or our actions speak and work. We can see with the poem, Shoveling Snow with Buddha, that our lives speak most truly with presence and not with words. The snow is the simple labor of making the driveway clean, of shoveling one heavy load after another, and finding the rhythm of hands and back and legs pushing off and being utterly present for the act of shoveling. We are present to do what needs to be done, and there is little to say about it other than be grateful for the ability to act in the moment. We don't have to analyze it or reflect endlessly upon it or try to find its deeper meaning. The reward is doing the job. And knowing your lips on hot chocolate in the end is enough. You don't need words, but you need to be present to the act. Presence counts more than words. It is like the famous passage from Thich Nhat Hanh, where he counsels us to wash the dishes, and not to get on to the next thing or not pay attention, but to be alive in the moment. I sometimes say that Unitarian Universalism is about deeds, not creeds. But we can be a wordy bunch that can talk something to death before we do it. Voicing all our concerns about what could go wrong, or making sure that every last voice is heard and every God invoked. It's like the old series of jokes about how many UUs it takes to screw in a light bulb or some equivalent task. The joke always included the forming of a committee to discuss the various options. We need doers of the word and not speakers only. We all want answers. Learning not to speak is tough. Let's consider our own lives and the silence we need to cultivate in a world that beckons with endless words, which these days often confuse us about what is truthful. There's a Zen story, perhaps you've heard it, about the pupils of the Tendai school. Four of the novices there promised to be silent for a week to learn meditation. On the first day, they all did very well until night fell and no one had lighted the oil lamps. It got darker and darker until one of the students exclaimed, "Fix those lamps!" A second student, upon hearing this, was surprised to hear the first one talk. "We are not supposed to say a word," he remarked. "You two are stupid. Why did you talk?" asked the third. "I am the only one who has not talked," concluded the fourth pupil. Well, not for long. We all want to tell our story, but when we feel the need to comment on everything or narrate every detail of our lives, perhaps we lose the thread of what is important. We learn to be silent when we can listen to another's story and when we focus on what lies in front of us that needs to be done. focusing on the labor of shoveling snow lets us all see the reality of the universe in the very flesh we bear. Our shoulders ache, our arms flex, and we pay attention to what is in front of us. When we can truly pay attention to the person in front of us as well, we see and hear them and begin to let God or a deeper truth speak and act in the world, because compassion has been let loose. We wash the dishes to wash the dishes, doing what needs to be done. We need Buddhas to shovel snow with focus and intent. In the coming months, there will be lots of words that are not true that are spoken. And we must listen for the truth and teach the truth and act as its advocates. You and I cannot make the world shut up, but we can quiet the world through the peace of a listening heart coupled with compassionate actions. Our words often become a reflection of what we think others want to hear, or a projection of our own fears. Compassion for another pierces the armor we have put on for what we think we should say to make them feel better or solve their problems. We give witness to our ability to express love in the world, not with words, but by listening, by doing, and by being present for each other. So may it be.